I'm Terry Thornton, Curator of Education, and I'm happy to welcome you to Tuesday Evenings at the Modern. Tuesday Evenings is an ongoing series that happens in the fall and again in the spring. And tonight brings us to the end of our fall 2007 series, and it has been a great run, a really good series. Tonight's closing act is very fitting, I think, in that it is Calaminis, and he is an artist represented in our collection. The work in the collection, of course, being the mesmerizing exposed painting Mars Black from 2002 that is currently on view in its usual location on the first floor in Gallery 3. I think it's an interesting location in that being made in 2002, it slightly disrupts a somewhat consistent chronological installation by being hung only three galleries into what it generally begins in Gallery 2 with abstract expressionism and ends predominantly in minimalism with a few more conceptual installation-based pieces thrown in. But it's also interesting because exposed painting Mars Black not only holds its own with its predecessor, it also creates an interesting discourse about what painting was and is, and how when a painting is executed with mindful sincerity and conviction, the experience it evokes is in fact timeless, informed by but not burdened by the history of painting. For that reason, it is also lovely to have Callum Innes here following Michael Oppian's presentation last week on the Modern's current exhibition, Declaring Space. The relationships, I think, are quite clear. Perhaps known for the exposed paintings, for the most part, Callum's work works in a number of different ways, even though each series clearly borrows lessons from other series. The common characteristic being their deceptive simplicity that lures and confounds viewers, leaving a lasting impression that I think operates something like memory. Interestingly, the title of his 15-year survey of work is the title is From Memory, which is also the title, I think, of an early breakthrough piece. But I do have to say that I think that's a very fitting title, and that is the experience that I seem to have with these paintings. I walk away with that kind of sensation that I get from memory. The exhibition originated in Edinburgh at the Fruit Market Gallery and has traveled to Modern Art Oxford, Kettle's Yard in Cambridge, and opens this month at the MCA in Sydney, Australia. It is accompanied by a beautiful, stunningly beautiful, monograph of Callum's career to date. The book happens to include a very nice essay by our own Michael Oppian, and I'm happy to report that it is available and, in fact, signed by the artist in the Modern store. Callum was born in Edinburgh, Scotland, where he lives and works today in what sounds to be a spectacular studio. He studied drawing and painting at Gray School of Art in Aberdeen, went on to complete a postgraduate DIP at Edinburgh College of Art. I'm unfamiliar with that, but it's on the resume, so I will believe it.
It's before MAs.
Okay, there we go. Okay. He can explain that further when he gets up here. Okay. And in 2003, he was awarded an honorary doctorate at Aberdeen University. In 2004, he was made an associate member of the Royal Scottish Academy. Callum was shortlisted for the coveted Turner Prize in 1995, and in 1998, he was awarded the Nat West Prize, and in 2002, the Jerwood Prize. He is represented in Edinburgh by the Ingleby Gallery, and in London by Frith Street Gallery, where an exhibition of new paintings just opened on November 2nd. In New York, Callum's work is represented by the Sean Kelly Gallery, where he was most recently included in one of those exhibitions that can change lives. At least that was my experience. The title of the show was Pure, and Callum's work was absolutely in keeping with everything that was right about that show. Tonight, we are honored to have him here to share such work with us. So without further delay, please join me in welcoming Callum Innes.
Thank you.
I've never really had such an introduction, so thank you, Terry, for inviting me here. These events, for me, I find quite difficult, so please, if you want to ask a question while I'm talking, shout out. It's easier for me. You'll pull more information out of me by doing that. So don't feel embarrassed about asking something. I should start a little bit and explain. My education, my art education, was at the time very traditional in Scotland, very figurative education. And I went through a period of making figurative paintings for many years, well, through college and then two or three years after college. I was very much involved with the New Scottish Expressionism at the time. I did shows with Stephen Campbell and Peter Howson. I came to a point in my work where I was 22, 23, and the paintings were about a personal mythology, or an invented personal mythology. And I think at that age, I realised that they were all falsehoods, that they were all untruths. I was painting paintings, making up a story. I hadn't lived enough to paint about personal mythology. I hadn't actually gone through enough. So the work went through a period of change. And it's always quite difficult when your work is changing, when people know your work for a style, let's call it a style, the figuration that I was known for at the time, and you have your contemporaries on your shoulder looking at your work all the time. And a very important point came in my life. I spent a year living in Amsterdam and very lucky to get a residency, which, apart from, you know, I went to college in Aberdeen, and Aberdeen's a long way from Europe when you're in Aberdeen, and you need to get a bus fare to London and then from London across to Europe. I had never really spent the time travelling around Europe or seeing the museums. I'd only seen reproduction. The benefit of being in Aberdeen, it was a good college at the time, and there was good tutors, and they were young. The problem with it was 600 miles north of London, and then to get into Europe, you had to travel further, and I was a student that had no money. So I'd only seen work from reproduction. So the work went through this period of change, and to cut a long story short, I slowly took the figure out of the work. I will say now that I still see my work as being inherently figurative, and I'll come back later on at the very end of the lecture. I still see the figure as being very important in the work, the physicality of the work. So the change started to take place. It took a while in Amsterdam, but Amsterdam gave me the freedom actually just to make things work and actually just to make work. So we should start the lecture and the images. Excuse me. Could I have this image on here as well? How do we do that? It's spurious to you. This was from a catalogue I made in 1994, and it's a good way to describe how an artist maybe approaches work or how I approach work. And often, it's a list of 20 images that resonate with as many paintings, possibly. You know, what is revealed and what is hidden in the work. I don't approach painting with an image. I don't come with an image. But this was just a way, an introduction into a catalogue. It was partly written by Peter Fleissig and written by myself at the time. And we just talked about things that resonate in my head every day. And I won't go through them all. And as I say, some of them are fairly spurious. But A Man with a Turban, Jan van Eyck, it's a great painting, but what I think about when that painting is what happens when the turban is revealed or unravelled. Harold Zeman, When Attitudes Become Form, that was a fantastic show. It's just there. Cadmium Rot Dunkel 357 CIC 479. It was the painting I was working on that day. Adventure 45 Chanel, again slightly spurious. It was a colour of lipstick from a gallery director I worked with. She always wore the same lipstick. Robert Ryman, Entitled Orange. I might be corrected, but it's the only painting I've found that was called Entitled Orange of Robert Ryman. Scottish Item or Man United. Spurious, but all these things come into the work. When you go to a studio, I don't know what makes an artist work each day or actually approaches the studio. You come in and you have a coffee, you read the newspaper, and then you start the process of making work. And I very much, when I'm making work, pitch myself towards a painting or work that I'm making that day. So that's just an idea where it comes from. The last figurative painting I ever made, Red Head on Green, I think I titled it at the time. I haven't seen the painting for a long time. I think a friend got it, and it's disappeared somewhere. This was the last figurative painting I made in my head. I'd taken the head, the shape, the form of a head, and just made it into an oval. And I slowly had to get rid of all the gestures, all the marks. When the painting was quite expressive, it was full of colour, full of mark-making. And I will go back to say, for many years after this point, I denied the hand, the artist's hand in the painting. I wanted to create something, and you'll see from the next image, which has its own intrinsic history and quality. So that really was the last figurative painting I made. And we come to this piece that Terry mentioned, From Memory. This was made just when I came back from Amsterdam. Amsterdam, at the time I was there, apart from travelling, I just slowly emptied out the figure of the work, made some drawings, but I always kept a sketch pad, and I always do keep a sketch pad. And I had drawings of wild cucumber plants. Don't ask me why it's a wild cucumber plant. It was just a linear drawing I had in a sketchbook. And when you get to a point where you've emptied everything out of work, or emptied the image out, and it wasn't taking all the images out, I had to start again. And I was so terrified about the hand making a gesture or the gesture being apparent in the paintings. I wanted to create something which had its own intrinsic history and its own quality. It's almost like a found object. And the only way I seemed to do this at the time was working on a piece of corrugated cardboard, mainly because I couldn't really afford paint or paper or whatever, and that's just a hard luck story. But I sank the image of the wild cucumber plant, just the silhouette, into the corrugation. So I actually, for the first time, managed to achieve something that stood in its own right, had its own history. You could have found it in the street. And that's something I tagged onto, and I tagged onto for many years, to the point that it became a white lie in my head. So we'll go to that in the future, but now, this is the very important thing for me. I needed to make works which didn't have the history of the expressionism, of the gesture. I needed to make something which was becoming apparent that could exist in itself. It became part of the fabric of the material. I moved fairly quickly from that point to these works, which were called Cento. And it was works made up of quotations. So there's still a reference to an image. There's still a reference to a form of a leaf. The interesting thing for me, I discovered, well, this was butcher's paper from Amsterdam. It's oil paper. It's used for wrapping metal, but they call it butcher's paper. I don't know why. I could paint an image onto this paper. And by dissolving the image or taking the image away, I would actually dissolve back into the wax of the paper, back into the fabric of the material. So it was working again, like it operated in the same way as the corrugation. The image became part of the materiality of the surface. They were all in the series. I should have said at the very beginning. What I'm going to do, sorry, nerves, is show you series of works which are ongoing. And it's not going to be chronological. We'll start with the early works, and some of them were made this year. So before I confuse you even further. But these were the very first works before I started making paintings on canvas. And I made a lot of these paintings. I actually went through a lot of these paper works where we'd make an image, usually a plant form or something that's natural, and then I would dissolve it off. And I'll show you a few of these just now. The important thing for me, I was about to say that they're human scale, that one isn't, is that you can see the layering in it. You can see, and to go back into the wax was very important, to actually back into the substance of the material. And that's when I meant to go, ah. Or ah. Let's go back one. It's going like that. So again, just dissolving marks. At this point, there was a lot of chance involved in the work. And chance is a dangerous thing. If chance takes over, you can take it forward. I can always see the possibilities in something happening, occurring, as long as you capture it and then take it forward. But at this point, I was experimenting with the paper. So where you see there's a mark made and there's a rundown, but it's continually made. It's pressed in again and again to get into the wax. So it's still quite a physical process. These were all very human scale, hence the figuration. It's important to me. It wasn't the fact that the paper only came in a metre wide, but they were cut to roughly 2 metres. I don't think there's many people that are 2 metres tall, maybe more in America. But the presence of the work, when you approach the work, it had a very human scale about it. I think that's quite important, how you approach something, the physicality of this agitated vertical. It's a line made and dissolved at the same time. So just a few of these, just to go through them. Again, completely lost the image. There was an image of a leaf underneath there, then I covered it over and I went back through it. And then we turn to the canvas. If I'm honest, it was quite hard working from something which is so delectable in a way, and it's a nice word to use for the oil paper, where it has its own qualities, is how I started to make paintings and how I still dealt with the image. And I made these paintings. These were the first canvases that I made after the oil works and after I came back from Amsterdam. So they date back to 1990. It's a quotations painting. I'm using the same title from Cento, but just calling it quotations paintings. Quotations of what? Quotations of just images, leaves, anything. And basically, they all started off as prime little leaves that I just dissolved. I use turpentine. It's called tonking. I learned that at art school. And you get a piece of material and you hit the surface with it. But I started to play visually with the space, the structure of the painting, how space could move within a painting, how space would go beyond the painting. It's interesting looking at the Fontana today and reminding me how I looked at Fontana earlier on. So they felt like puncture marks at the time, but the interesting thing about them for me, they became part of the materiality again of the canvas. So it was a sized canvas and rabbit skin glue. And how the paint actually, because the mark making, the actual surface or application of paint was completely dissolved, so you could not tell if I had actually gone there with a brush and put it. It just became part again of the fabric. And they were important at the time for me. It was a way forward. We all wanted to make paintings. I wanted to take it from paper into canvas. And this just seemed the right connection between the paperworks. It's always very difficult to make a paperwork which has got, again, its own beauty and then transfer it to canvas. So you have to make something completely different. That is a Pace gallery. I was very lucky to be included in a show that was curated by Rainer Krohn and David Moss called Painting Alone in 1991. A story attached to this exhibition was that I sent the work out. I'd never transported any work at all to the States before. In fact, I'd never transported any work at all anywhere. And I phoned up a friend who worked in a gallery and he said, I recommend the shipper. So they came with a van that had flappy sides. I gave them the paintings and they promised me they had created them. They did create them, but they sat at Gatwick Airport for 2 weeks in the pouring rain. And when they arrived, there was 5 paintings sent out at the time. When they arrived at Pace Gallery, Douglas Baxter phoned me up and it was the days before email and said, they're really interesting, Callum. The mould is fantastic. And at the time, Georg Herold was in the show, he's in the background, and he was making these caviar paintings. So they thought there was a connection there. I was lucky because we had sent them out 2 months in advance so they'd be documented properly, because at that point I hadn't married my wife, who's a photographer. And I was able to send out new work, which benefited everyone, actually. The painting on the left is a white identified form, which no longer exists. It's, we'll come back to destroying work later on, whether it's... The series moved on into the identified forms. I left this series behind about 6 years ago, and I actually just returned to it this year again. If I think I can take something forward, I will take it forward. In the series of works that I make, there's some that I've completely stopped, and others you take forward until you get to a point where you can't take it further. Occasionally I return to them. And if I return to them, the only reason is that I feel that I've done something in the other series of works and it's led to be taken forward. It's very much the way I work. If I see something, it's like Calvinist attitude, that if I do something and I see the possibilities in it, I will push it again, and I'll push it very quickly. This is an early identified form where, again, chance, very thin surface canvas. I mean, it's very thin. The olive green on it is almost a wash. And I was laying turpentine on it, and it was just dripping off. For 2 or 3 years, I only made paintings with olive green and white. And mainly, again, to keep this connection, one, to nature, where the work had started off. So when I dissolved olive green, it almost was like a kind of alchemy. It became gold on the size canvas. And white, because that's about colour. To me, it's about colour when you work with white. It reflects every colour. So if you know, if you're wearing red, green, the white takes it on, it absorbs it. And again, a reaction to the earlier paintings, which were full of colour. So for 2 or 3 years, I limited myself just to olive green and white. I'll show you. This is a painting, again, it no longer exists. There's a lot of paintings I'm going to show you that no longer exist. I think it's important to see the paintings that I have doubts with as well. I think it no longer exists because somebody said it looks like bird shite, but it's on reflection. It's a bit spurious and a bit silly of me, but sometimes people say things and they stick in your head. Again, it was making a mark and dissolving a mark, finding the presence. Before every painting, I make a little drawing, a little thumbnail sketch of how I want the movement to go through the painting, or the structure. And this was very much exploring for me how I could work with canvas, work with paint, and also work with the format of a stretcher. The identified forms moved on. They quickly became, from heavy drips or heavy pours, to being very structured, in the sense that I discovered as the paint became thicker on the surface of the canvas, because it's a horizontal paint mark, and I'm breaking it with a vertical. Again, it goes back to landscape. If you look at landscape, everything is broken with a vertical. So you have this horizontal, so I'm applying the paint horizontally. That if I let turpentine run, or I poured it, I never poured it, I let it drip, it would meander. So it would meander through the creases in the paint. So these paintings started to be formed where I'd actually make the paintings from the bottom to the top. And not many people can see this in the paintings, and it happens today in the exposed paintings, and it happens in many of the paintings. So I can control the painting. I'm actually making a line from the bottom edge up to the point where I clear an area of paint and then dissolve it down. And you can see actually where the paint has dripped down, where it does start to meander. But it became not about control, it just, to the extent to achieve something which looked like it appeared naturally. Ultimately, I had to control it to an extent where I actually formed a line, picked out a line. This is a Tate painting from 1994 or 3, can't remember. three identified forms. It's slightly larger scale. It's about 2 meters 20 by 190. That's 1996. Two identified forms. It's easy. Two, three. This is an exhibition at Galerie Nachtan Steffen in Austria, in Vienna. I'll go on to explain the exposed paintings as we approach them, but there was an isolated form there, which I haven't got any today to show you, in the far corner, which is the black one, which is a totally solid canvas with little circles taken out. The reason I'm not showing them is they're very hard to reproduce. And then I've refilled each circle, so each circle has a halo around it. It gives you an idea of the scale. And agitated vertical. This, these works, this continues today, this series, but it also continues in every exposed painting that I make. This is a line taken out of the canvas. So you start to understand that I dissolve things. I make a painting first, then I unpaint it. And that's an important thing, that I'm always making a painting first. And in this, again, it's picked out from the bottom. And it's through, and I call it agitated vertical because, again, it looks like it's formed itself. It's dissolved. It happens over a couple of hours. You're taking an image out, a line out, and the paint falls in. It comes in again. I revolve the painting. I do it from bottom to top again. Revolve the painting. Do it several times until I actually get a channel that is happening. Again, you can't see the brush marks. It just looks like the paint is crushed in. These are early ones from 92, 93. Again, made freehand. This is a series that still continues. The verticality is really important in it. The space that you're in. You don't know if you're behind the painting or in front of the painting when they work. Some of the larger ones, the line is sitting in front of you. It's a very physical thing. And sometimes you can slip behind the line and sometimes the line is coming towards you. It's, again, it relates to the figure standing in front of the painting for me. And that's the most recent one from the studio, made 2 months ago, or a month ago, in orange, or cadmium. It's dissolved the same way. I liked it because it felt very 70s. I don't know why. You turn to things. I mean, in everything. If this relates directly to the series that I'll show you at the very end, where I just made a show at Frith Street, which is all black paintings. And after 2 months of making black paintings, I really had to use some colour. And it's important that this on. For me, these paintings, this space through the time, they continue. It's almost like